Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. The Mueller investigation is powering along quietly, even as the president and his allies say it will fizzle. But the Democratic National Committee is taking no chances. On Friday, it filed a civil lawsuit claiming a conspiracy between the Trump campaign, WikiLeaks, and Russia to tilt the U.S. presidential elections. Here's DNC Chair Tom Perez on ABC's This Week.
We have seen story after story in the conspiracy between the Russians and the Trump campaign to affect the outcome of the election. I did my homework. We have a strong case. That's why we brought it.
But there's strong pushback against the suit, not just from Republicans, but from some Democrats themselves. This hour on Point, the DNC's lawsuit, a savvy move or a silly distraction? You can join us on air or online. Where do you come down on the DNC lawsuit? Is this a shrewd move or Washington theatrics? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. A little later this hour, we'll look ahead to Wednesday's oral arguments before the Supreme Court on the president's travel ban. But first, joining me from Washington is Rosalind Helderman, political enterprise and investigations reporter for The Washington Post. She and her colleagues at The Post broke this story on Friday about the DNC lawsuit, and you can find a link to their reporting at onpointradio.org. Rosalind, welcome to the show.
Hi, Meghna. Thank you for having me.
So first of all, give us a little bit more detail about exactly what the DNC is alleging in this civil lawsuit.
Sure. They are alleging a wide-ranging conspiracy between Russia, the GRU, which is the military intelligence wing that is thought to be behind the hacks of the Democratic Party's servers, and then sort of two different groups of people. So a conspiracy between Russia on the one hand, and then a variety of named members of the Trump campaign and the Trump campaign itself, who the Democratic Party say were given kind of warnings through contacts with Russians that Russia might have this kind of material. And instead of reporting it or otherwise doing something about it, they kind of cheerled the hacks through the campaign. And then finally, WikiLeaks and its founder, Julian Assange, which actually published the stolen material.
Okay. So to close watchers of American politics over the past year and a half, basically, none of this is going to sound new. And I think that's one of the immediate criticisms that the DNC faced when it filed this lawsuit on Friday, right? That when your reporting about it came out on Friday, that it's sort of taking what's already publicly known and just repackaging it in a narrative that suits the DNC and putting it in civil court, in a federal court.
I think that's right. And I don't think that the parties sort of claim that they were putting out new facts. I think what they were saying was, from their perspective, they were the victim of these of what they believe to be illegal activities, the kind of breaking into their systems and the stealing of their material. And now they want to do something about it. The lawsuit seeks monetary damages. If they were to win, they would likely be awarded millions of dollars, and they would have an important symbolic step to say, you know, someone has held these folks accountable for the attack on our computer systems.
Hmm. There are, as you reported, though, there are a couple of new things, at least some new dates about when the DNC's servers were first hacked back in July, right, of 2015.
Right. That is true. The party revealed a couple of new details about the forensic analysis they've done. They gave us the date in July of 2015, which is very early, that they first, they're now analysis shows the first of the attacks on their systems began. And then they gave us some dates in April 2016 when they said that there was another major breach of their system. And they point out, perhaps interestingly, that they've first observed what is now believed to be people associated with Russia extracting large amounts of material from their systems on April 22nd, 2016. That was just 4 days before the young Trump advisor, George Papadopoulos, was told in London by this London-based professor that the Russians held damaging material.
Right. And remind me, is Papadopoulos one of the people named in this lawsuit by the DNC?
He is. They named some people. They didn't name others. They said that they named the people who could be shown to have the strongest warnings, people who actually had contact with Russians in settings where they were apparently told it was possible that the Russians had damaging material.
Right. And Papadopoulos has already pled guilty and is cooperating with Robert Mueller's investigation, as is Rick Gates, who's also named in this lawsuit from the DNC. Paul Manafort also. The name, he has put in a not guilty plea, and we also see the names of Donald Trump Jr. and Jared Kushner as well. I mean, that brings me to sort of the big question, Rosalind. And let me just ask it through playing some tape here, because a lot of people are wondering, would the DNC's civil lawsuit that they've filed interfere with in any way with the criminal investigation currently being led by Robert Mueller? And on ABC's on ABC this weekend with George Stephanopoulos, DNC Chair Tom Perez said he doesn't think so.
Our justice system has a criminal justice side and a civil justice side. I used to investigate police misconduct allegations. And while we were conducting the criminal proceeding, we invariably had civil suits that were filed. And we were always able to work out protocols so that we wouldn't interfere, the civil suit wouldn't interfere with the criminal probe.
Now, Rosalind, that may be true in a strictly legal interpretation, but politically, do you buy that?
Well, politically is a whole separate story. I mean, I think before we move off the legal front, there are legal experts who say that this suit is going to have a high hurdle on all kinds of grounds to move forward. So there's going to be a lot of legal debate before we even get to the point where they would actually be seeking discovery and taking people's testimony, the kind of things that could interfere with the Mueller probe.
Well, so high hurdles such as, does the DNC have standing? Can they sue the government of Russia? Things like that?
Absolutely. Can they sue the government of Russia is a good one. Typically, foreign governments have sovereign immunity, which prevents them from being sued. The Democratic Party says they have a good case because they can show that their private property, their computer servers, were trespassed here in the United States. But there'll be a lot of legal debate before we ever get to the point where we're talking about the kind of evidence gathering that might or might not interfere with the Mueller probe.
Mm. Okay, so then take us to the political question, though,
right.
Because we have seen some grumbles of unhappiness from Democrats saying that they think this is a distraction right now, that it's too backwards looking to 2016 rather than forward to the midterms of 2018, which are hotly contested in a lot of places.
Yeah, it's really reflective of a broader debate within the Democratic Party about how much they should be talking about Russia and the Russia probe. There are people within the party who believe that this is a very powerful issue and is worth kind of relitigating, and that the American people need to know what happened. There are also people who, as you say, think that this is not an issue that moves voters. And every minute that Democrats are talking about this is a moment they're talking about 2016 rather than what Democrats would do if they were elected this year. There's also the issue of, you know, there are a lot of Democrats who've spent a lot of time saying that the Mueller probe is not about politics, that it's supposed to be sort of a patriotic exercise of what happened in our democracy. And they fear that a party-led lawsuit on the same topic kind of injects politics into the Mueller probe, not that the Mueller probe has been free from that, but injects it in a way that they've been trying to argue is not the Democratic position.
Right. Well, Rosalind Helderman is political enterprise and investigations reporter for The Washington Post. She and her colleagues at The Post broke this story on Friday about the DNC's lawsuit filed in federal court. And again, we have a link to that at onpointradio.org. Rosalind, thank you so very much for your reporting and for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, joining me now from Washington is Philip Wegman, commentary writer for the Washington Examiner. Philip, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me, Meghna.
This is a really interesting lawsuit and a moment for the Democratic National Committee to file it. Do you think in any way, does it possibly undermine what Robert Mueller is doing on the criminal side of things?
That's certainly the danger, because this doesn't happen just in a vacuum. Obviously, there are political considerations. And as soon as this lawsuit was introduced, you saw that Perez put Democrats and also, you know, pro-law and order Republicans in a very tight spot, because Democrats have said from the very beginning that the Mueller investigation should be allowed to run its course. You should allow the special prosecution to get to the facts and evidence, and then we'll go from there. And you've also had some Republicans, think Tom Tillis or Trey Gowdy, who have said similar things. But now what Tom Perez has essentially allowed the White House to do is conflate this lawsuit with the Mueller investigation and say that from the very beginning it was political. And at that point, it's going to be very difficult for Republicans to defend Mueller. And frankly, Democrats are going to have to explain why what Mueller is doing is apolitical and in pursuit of the truth, while their own party is trying to push this through litigation.
It does make me wonder if the Democrats are sort of showing their hand in that. Are they concerned that the Mueller investigation may fizzle out or be brought to a premature end by the Trump administration? And they're just trying to get the ball rolling in civil court to sort of pick up in discovery where Mueller might be forced to leave off.
Well, it's very interesting because you see Jackie Speier, for instance, in the House Intelligence Committee, was especially frustrated and very angry that Tom Perez had gotten out in front of the ball on this one. But as far as any concerns that perhaps, Mueller won't be able to continue his work, some sort of situation where, Democrats are moving now in order to get all of the evidence out here, assuming, Mueller doesn't have a job for whatever reason, it just doesn't seem that is realistic. I mean, already you see the attorney general saying that if Sessions said that if Mueller goes, he might go. You have both, McConnell and Ryan urging the president not to fire Mueller. And the Senate Intelligence Committee, they already haven't wrapped up their work. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of loose ends here still. And it seems like Perez and the DNC are frankly trying to win some political points before the dust settles in the investigation.
Well, we are talking about the Democratic National Committee's civil lawsuit against the Trump administration, against the Russian government, and against WikiLeaks, alleging a conspiracy around the 2016 presidential elections. What are your thoughts about it? Do you think the DNC is doing the right thing by bringing this civil case? Could interesting things be discovered in discovery if the case gets that far? Or do you think this is a distraction, a fundraising ploy, something else entirely that could have political ramifications for the Democrats themselves? We'll have a lot more when we come back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Listen to the news and wonder, is there anything good happening out there? I'm Mindy Thomas from NPR's Wow in the World. And each week, Guy Raz and I take you and your kids on wild adventures to explore the most wow-worthy news stories on the planet. Find Wow in the World on Apple Podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're looking at the Democratic National Committee's lawsuit claiming a conspiracy between the Trump administration, the Russian government, and WikiLeaks to tilt the 2016 presidential election. You can join the conversation. What do you see here? Is this just further proof to you that Washington politics has become one depressing food fight? Or are the Democrats right to push for a civil lawsuit even as Robert Mueller's investigation continues? I'm joined today by Philip Wegman. He's commentary writer for The Washington Examiner. And Philip, just before the break, you mentioned some frustration from some Democrats about this lawsuit, particularly Jackie Speier, California Democrat. She was on CNN on Friday night saying she doesn't think the party should be getting into what she called a political tit-for-tat with the Trump administration.
I actually think this lawsuit is ill-conceived, and I'm not very supportive of it. I think we have a very serious criminal activity underway in this country by the Russians and possibly by those within the Trump campaign. And to make this political is actually the wrong thing to be doing.
And it's interesting because we can see just even amongst On Point listeners how there's a broad range of opinions about the political merits of this lawsuit. Because I'm seeing here that Colette Smith has sent us a comment on Facebook, and she says, lawsuits sometimes are simply about discovery. I think that with the Trump's team's refusal to release documents and so many of those who are attached to Trump who have admitted to perjury, so discovery is prudent. But on the other hand, on the website, Honesty, someone calling themselves Honesty, is saying that this lawsuit is an insult to anyone's intelligence. Not only is it laughable, it's an enormous mistake on the part of the DNC. It opens them up to broad discovery, which will bring into the litigation anyone and everyone associated with the DNC. So, Philip, just a quick question to you. I mean, could this potentially backfire for the Democrats?
Well, I take the president at his tweet the other day when he says that this is a good development. Donald Trump and Republicans in the administration see this as an opportunity if this lawsuit even does get to the point of discovery. That's still an open question. But assuming that it does, Republicans are already gearing up to make this as painful and embarrassing as possible. You saw that the Trump campaign, their spokesperson said, yes, you know, once we get to discovery, we'll be asking all sorts of questions about
the
dossier, what Debbie Wasserman Schultz, what decisions she was making with regards to the Clinton and the Sanders campaign. So that could be a potential danger. But I think the fundamental thing here is, do we really want 2018 to be as exhausting and as negative and just the same vitriol as we had in 2016? That's a gamble that I don't know that the electorate is going to accept for Democrats trying to retake majorities.
Right. So you mentioned the Trump campaign kind of being gleeful about this. This lawsuit. Brad Parscale, campaign manager for Trump's reelection, put out a statement, as you mentioned, saying there's a great deal the American public wants to know about the corruption of the Democrats, their collusion to influence the 2016 presidential election, and their role in promoting a scam investigation of the Trump campaign. Philip, stand by here for just a second, because I want to welcome in another person into this conversation, Kimberly Atkins. She is Washington bureau chief and columnist for the Boston Herald. She's also an attorney as well. Kimberly, it's good to talk with you.
Hi, Magna.
I have a question. Let's hit this head on. Like, is this a legitimate lawsuit being brought by the DNC, or does it amount more to a political stunt? Because I see just on Friday, they've already been sending out emails, fundraising emails, on the backs of this lawsuit. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it can be both. I mean, the fundraising email is actually the first thing I saw on this and how I became aware that it happened. They sent it out very quickly after the report came out. And certainly this is something that by Tom Perez's own admission during his interviews, he has said that he has heard from people within the organization, Democrats, saying we have to do something. As the Mueller investigation is going on, very secretly, there's not a lot of leaks coming out of it. I think there is some consternation on the part of some Democrats that this hacking happened and largely the people involved got away with it. And this is a way for their messaging to say, no, we are demanding that some sort of satisfaction for what happened.
Right. Just to jump in here, Donna Brazile, you know, has been tweeting exactly to this point. I mean, she was saying that once again, some people will dismiss the DNC's lawsuit in the same manner they dismissed the 2016 hacking or election interference in real time. She's telling America, stop sleeping at the switch. Russia deliberately hacked our democracy, and this is not simply about the past, but also future elections.
Right, right. And they're saying as 2018 and 2020 approach, something really needs to be done. It's also important to keep in mind civil lawsuits are often filed at the same time as criminal lawsuits and work for different purposes. I mean, they have different standards of proof. It's much easier to get a judgment if it it reaches that level in a civil suit, then it is a criminal case. One of the most obvious examples of that is O.J. He was found not guilty of murder, yet everything he owns he has to give to the Goldman family, everything he earns, because of that civil judgment that was filed. Even in Watergate, there was a civil case brought by the DNC then against the Nixon campaign, and they actually won a settlement of about $750,000 for the break-in at the Watergate. So this isn't unprecedented. I think the difference here is you do have all of these other issues that you've been discussing about discovery, about what could happen, whether this turns into a big political fight, more so than we've already seen with the Mueller probe. And that is a big risk that the Democrats run.
Well, we've got lots of callers who want to join us, so let me turn to them. Claudia is calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. You're on the air, Claudia.
Hi, Meghna. Thank you so much for your time. I'm a registered Democrat, and I do want to see the Trump campaign held accountable, and I'm deeply concerned about Russian involvement, but I do believe that this is a distraction. I think that this lawsuit takes money and that the DNC needs to be focusing on messaging and supporting local candidates who are actually working on helping the working class. And there are a lot of new people running for office that need support. And with the Mueller investigation ongoing, this just seems like a distraction to me and wasteful spending, in my opinion. And it really frustrates me that there are people volunteering their time, including myself, because they want to see changes. And the DNC is instead focusing on this when it's just going to appear that they're not focusing for American workers and everyday people.
Okay, Claudia. So can I just ask you a quick question here? I mean, the DNC is behind the RNC in terms of recent fundraising here. So just to be purely cynical for a moment, if this lawsuit even helps them close that fundraising gap, will it have served a purpose for the party? I mean, if you're looking ahead to 2018, right?
I personally don't think, I think people can see through that. And I think that, yes, while money is very important, I do think that people's energy and enthusiasm takes it further than money. And I think that in the end, even if the DNC gets more money, it's really about the enthusiasm from people. And they're just not going to want to support Democrats if all the DNC is going to do is make, you know, a distraction towards towards this when the Mueller investigation is already
is going on. Yeah. Claudia, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to William, who's calling from Detroit. You're on the air, William.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wanting to call in and comment on one aspect of the possible conspiracy that they're highlighting with the lawsuit. And from what I noticed, the information that WikiLeaks put out with the hacked email seems to get the most attention. But what actually caused the most damage with voters was the way those WikiLeaks releases were coordinated with propaganda posts that lied about what the WikiLeaks emails actually said. And so I was wondering if that might be one aspect of this, and maybe if the DNC is more so using this lawsuit as a way of highlighting parts of the conspiracy that the Mueller investigation might not, you know, necessarily bring to the attention of the American public.
I see.
Or if this is purely about, you know, just the hacked emails and the illegal aspect of that.
William, thank you so much for your call. Philip Wegman, do you have a response for William?
I think I do. You know, to both William and Claudia's points, I think both of them see the Russia investigation as very serious, as they should. And this is what's so interesting about this lawsuit. I think that, you know, when Tom Perez and the DNC decide that they're going to sue Russia, of all people, call me old-fashioned, but I think that, you know, foreign policy should be left to governments. But I think that when they launch a lawsuit that a lot of people see as unserious, there's an inherent danger there, because what they essentially have done is they allow some of these people who have made up in their own minds that Russia played no part in the election to, you know, simply dismiss this as pure political pandering. And, you know, we are in another election cycle right now. You know, Tom Perez was correct when he said that there's nothing to stop Russians from doing this year what they did in 2016. And that's an opinion that, you know, is shared even by the Attorney General. Jeff Sessions was saying that last November. So if there is any sort of, you know, political strategy here, it seems to be undercutting a real national security interest.
Kimberly, what's your thought about that?
Yeah, you know, I think on one point, I think I'm not sure there's anything that this civil lawsuit will uncover or go beyond what Robert Mueller's investigation is doing. I mean, if you look at just the expertise, the wherewithal, the funding that they'll have to devote to this, I don't think they're on a fact-finding mission here. So I'm not sure that this will be a vehicle for doing what the caller suggested. But at the same time, civil suits do have a purpose. And there are issues that this case could present that might be novel issues of law. It's, for example, bringing this lawsuit against Russia, which generally is protected, foreign nations are protected by sovereign immunity.
Yep.
Well, they're bringing this trespassing claim, which is a common law claim that would not be subject to that. It's basically saying, yes, they may not have been standing in the U.S. soil, may not have been standing and grabbing this server physically, but by intruding electronically, they committed a trespass that caused damage to the DNC. And that might be a new way to be able to reach out and seek some sort of redress to foreign governments that interfere with computer systems. This could be a novel area of law. One of the criticisms is maybe the DNC should have focused on that specifically rather than going after the Trump campaign and all these other people, leaving that to the Mueller investigation. But there are a lot of interesting things that can come up here. We just have to wait and see how it plays out.
Yeah. So let me just ask both of you. I mean, we heard the caller earlier talking about, like, she's out there volunteering for the Democrats and worrying that this lawsuit, you know, could be a distraction, especially in places where Democrats might have a chance in districts or states that the president won handily in 2016. And Philip, let me just get a little bit more of your thoughts on that, because I'm thinking, you know, in Connor Lamb's race in Pennsylvania or Doug Jones's race in Alabama. I mean, obviously, the Trump administration was part of the story there, but those two men, in a way, won by not putting 2016 front and center. So, I mean, could callers, like we had earlier, have a point about their concern about the effects on the midterms?
It's definitely interesting, because if there is this blue wave coming, and certainly all indications, you know, suggest that, you know, like you said, Connor Lamb and Doug Jones, and also, you know, the races in Wisconsin recently. If there is this blue wave coming, it seems like this is almost counterproductive, because if Democrats are going to retake the House and possibly the Senate, then they have an opportunity to actually do something. You know, Tom Perez is not a legislator, but a lot of the people, you know, in the DNC, they are. And what is the nature of someone who's in Congress? It's to legislate. And so when you have Democrats trying to force this into this messy court battle, I think that's very disenfranchising for a lot of voters, because they've got to be thinking, well, wait a minute, we sent you to Congress to hold the administration's feet to the fire, and now you're going to file a lawsuit?
But on the other hand, let me just jump in here. I'm sort of like I'm exploring both sides of this rapidly flowing river here. I'm thinking back to what I mentioned Donna Brazile had tweeted about, you know, this is not just about 2016. This is about 2018 as well. And, you know, if we really want to get to the heart of the sanctity of American elections, why shouldn't the parties, and in this case, the Democratic National Committee, try to compel exploration of exactly what happened in every possible venue that they can, including civil court, Philip?
I think that perhaps civil court could come later. That would definitely make sense. We were talking about the Watergate investigation not long ago, you know, and I defer to Kimberly and her expertise in that area. But I think that what you see with this emphasis on the Russian hacks is that, you know, Democrats are going to make these elections about one thing, and that's Donald Trump and this collusion or obstruction, you know, or wherever the goalpost may be at the moment. And that's going to be very difficult for those Democrats, you know, in red states. Think about Claire McCaskill, who said that this was a silly distraction. Think about Joe Donnelly in Indiana. They're not going to have as much of an opportunity to run the races that Doug Jones and Connor Lamb did, because they're going to be asked again and again, you know, about this, you know, lawsuit, and they won't be able to talk specifically about the investigation in nonpartisan terms.
Right.
Instead, they'll have to kind of, you know, set aside very serious questions and defend against allegations that this is a witch hunt.
Kimberly, jump in here.
Yeah, and I think there's also an additional problem that the Democrats will face is that they have yet to really reckon with 2016. And one of the criticisms from Democrats is they should be putting more energy and emphasis into doing that, into doing a postmortem of sorts and looking outside of the Russian hacking, which we know what's going on. The Mueller investigation is investigating that. What steps, what mistakes the Democratic Party made for that allowed 2016, that massive loss, to happen? They still haven't done that. There are still particularly a lot of angry feelings about how Debbie Wasserman Schultz handled things with respect to the Bernie Sanders campaign. And none of these things have fully been resolved. And that's just going to play again as we move into 2018, certainly 2020, which is just around the corner. And if that is not resolved, that is going to lead to more problems substantively for the Democrats than what this lawsuit will solve.
Right. Well, we're getting a lot of comments here on our website. John Evergreen is writing, obviously the lawsuit is frivolous and the court should immediately dismiss it and sanction the plaintiffs and attorneys involved. On the other hand, Rosalind Zeiser on Facebook says, how can we not believe this? We all heard Trump during the debates in 2016 inviting Russia to hack Hillary. So a lot of different perspectives on the merit of this DNC lawsuit. That is what we're talking about this hour. We're trying to figure out whether the Democratic National Committee's lawsuit against the Trump administration and Russia and WikiLeaks for interference in the U.S. presidential elections in 2016 is going to work for the Democrats, or could it possibly backfire? Because remember, this is a civil lawsuit coming at a time where Robert Mueller's criminal investigation is ongoing. I'm speaking with Philip Wegman, commentary writer for The Washington Examiner, and Kimberly Atkins. She's with the Boston Herald and an attorney as well. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
What's unique about the human experience, and what do we all have in common? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on TED Radio Hour, we go on a journey through the big ideas, emotions, and discoveries that fill all of us with wonder. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the Democratic National Committee's new lawsuit alleging that the Trump administration colluded with WikiLeaks and Russia to disrupt the 2016 elections. My guests are Philip Wegman and Kimberly Atkins, and we've got a lot of listeners who want to have their say. So let's go to them. Bryn is calling from Middlebury Center, Pennsylvania. You're on the air, Bryn.
Hi. I strongly oppose the action of the Democratic National Committee. I'm a progressive Democrat activist in very rural Trump Republican area, and both parties are the minority. Most Americans don't vote. Of those who are registered, plurality are probably independent or approaching that. So the Republican Party, I think, has been taken over by a very right-wing clique. I do not see the progressives as a left-wing tiny minority, but we're presented that way in the press, and it's absolutely the wrong attack in this polarized time to circle the partisan troops to make it a Democratic issue. This is I think shooting all the volunteers and all the candidates running in Virginia and Pennsylvania, all across the country, in districts that hadn't had an opponent to a Republican.
Yeah, it could set them back there a little. I'm hearing you say, Bryn. Thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Gina, who's calling from Oklahoma City. You're on the air, Gina.
Hey, hello. Good job. Love your questions you're asking. I'm a Trump supporter and voter, and I never waver because he's always working for what the basic American is needing.
So what do you think about this lawsuit?
Well, the lawsuit, I was going to get to that.
Oh, sorry.
The lawsuit is absolutely crazy because just like even your Democratic callers are calling to say, they're shooting themselves in the foot. But it shows Hispanic Americans, Black Americans, and all Americans who need a job what they're focused on. They're focused on their little pity party in their bubble up there in Washington because they didn't win.
Hey, Gina, I'm sorry, sorry to cut you off earlier, and I have to apologize again, but I do have a question for you because I hear what you're saying, and in fact, exactly what you're mentioning, you're right. We've had callers and even guests saying, you know, they're concerned about the distraction that this lawsuit represents. But let me get down to the bottom of something with you. I'm just curious about what you have to say. Do you want to know, do you want to get to the bottom of what happened with Russian interaction, for example, in the 2016 election? Is that something you want to find out?
No, I could care less. What I care about is using energy and resources of the tax dollars we send to the Democrats and the Republicans use for what affects us. We get gossip all the time, okay? The liberal media is trying to keep everybody on this gossip trail. We don't care. We need a job. We need safety at our border. Trump is focused on that. He's an action president. Blah, 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 blah from the Democrats. We don't care.
Hey, so Gina, I really appreciate your thoughts. I have one more question for you because your candor is really inspiring here to me. But isn't it possible for Americans to care deeply about jobs and growing the economy and also care about the sovereignty and sanctity of our elections as well? Can't we have them both?
Well, let's go to Donna Brazile. She's making comments. Donna Brazile gave all the questions to Hillary Clinton. Who is she to be telling us what's right and wrong?
You're talking about one of the debates. Okay. I got you, Gina. Thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate that. Kimberly Atkins, we got a whole variety of stuff here, but I think the common theme so far is that a lot of people are more concerned about the distraction and negative implications of this politically, of the lawsuit, than they are perhaps of what could be uncovered if the lawsuit even reaches the discovery phase.
I think that's right. And I actually think that both Republicans and Democrats, supporters of President Trump, as well as supporters of Democrats, in some way are experiencing a bit of Russia fatigue. I think that is there is some thought that, hey, let Robert Mueller do his job, find what happened. Yes, it is important to keep foreign nations from interfering with our democratic systems. But I think there is a wariness of the day-to-day constant fighting over this, that the politicized fighting over this, and that this lawsuit will do nothing but exacerbate that, and that even for Democrats, that they really need to be focusing on what their message is, how they are going to convince voters that they can be the party that brings jobs and economic prosperity, how they can convince voters that they will be tough on foreign nations and be strong against things like terrorism, how they can do that and not just have this anti-Trump message, and that this lawsuit might be one of the things standing in the way for them to do that.
I want to get one more call in here while I can. Chris is calling from Watertown, Wisconsin. You're on the air, Chris.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I hope to add some rational commentary. I come from a state, Wisconsin, that has been experiencing irrational politics, proven legally that Republicans are gerrymandering, illegal politics. Your comment, your person, Philip, has no understanding of Wisconsin politics, at least. I don't know about his other understandings, but...
Chris, you're going to have to forgive me here because I'm just looking at the clock and we're really bearing down on time. I'm just wondering if you have a comment about the DNC lawsuit, and then I'll let Philip respond. But do you have a comment about the lawsuit? And we've just got a couple seconds.
The DNC made a right move.
Okay. Chris, thank you so much for your call. Philip Wegman, let me just turn that back to you. I mean, we have Chris there saying that you don't understand Wisconsin politics, and she thinks the DNC is doing the right thing.
Well, I haven't been to Wisconsin in a while, so full disclosure there. But I think what her comments show, and also what the comments of Gina before her mm-hmm. show, is that this sort of populism is not going to go away, even if we get rid of Donald Trump. A lot of folks, it seems, are less interested in the actual, you know, principled good government democracy argument, and they're more interested in, you know, how an individual policy is going to affect their life. And you know, if you are a voter on the fence one way or the other, and you don't have strong ties to either party, when it comes down to it, I think that you're more likely to vote for whoever is making a better promise to improve your life.
Yeah. Well, I just want to end this conversation with a couple of comments here from some more On Point listeners, just to, again, give us the breadth of opinion on this. This is from two Democrats. Roger Hart is saying at On Point Radio on our Twitter feed that it's clear nothing will be done by Trump to stop Russian interference in elections, so bring on the lawsuit. Whereas Doc Holliday is saying, really silly, the lawsuit. Unless Dems connect with the people, they might not win in November. Ask Hillary Clinton if you don't believe me. I'm a supporter. Well, we're not going to come to any conclusion about that since this lawsuit is still brand new anyway. Philip Wegman, commentary writer for The Washington Examiner, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Kimberly Atkins, Washington Bureau Chief and columnist for The Boston Herald and an attorney as well. Kimberly, it was great to have you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Magna.
And in a moment, we're going to look ahead to Wednesday's Supreme Court hearing on the Trump administration's travel ban. This is On Point. Well, on Wednesday, the highest court in the land will hear oral arguments on President Trump's proposed travel ban. And joining me now from Houston to explain the legal issues behind it is Associate Professor at South Texas College of Law, Josh Blackman. He's a contributor to Lawfare. Welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, this is the travel ban that the Supreme Court allowed to be instated in or to go forward in December. Why are they hearing it now? What exactly does the current case bring to the court?
So the current travel ban is actually the third iteration of the policy. President Trump issued it in September of 2017. The lower courts held that it was unlawful and unconstitutional, and the Trump administration appealed to the Supreme Court. Much to the surprise of many, in December, the Supreme Court let the entire policy go into effect temporarily while the case is progressing through the courts. Now it's back at the court for full consideration, and they will hear arguments on Wednesday.
Okay, so how significant then is this? I'm seeing some commentators, some legal observers, saying that this is a case really at its heart, which the Supreme Court will be kind of having its say on what influence or what power the judiciary should have in deciding issues of national security.
Traditionally, the courts have been very deferential to presidents in the areas of national security. They don't have access to all the classified information. They don't have access to a certain foreign policy interest of the United States, so they defer. In this case, at least with the lower courts, they haven't deferred to President Trump, and they've called him a bigot and a racist and argued that he doesn't deserve the sort of deference that past presidents have been afforded. So the big question in this case is, will the Supreme Court give the president the presumption of regularity, that is a presumption that he is the regular president, or will they say, because of what Donald Trump has said in the campaign trail and what he's tweeted for breakfast every morning, that we need to look at his actions a little bit more closely?
So, I mean, but given that they allowed the travel ban to go in effect in December, I mean, hasn't the court, in a sense, already shown us what it's thinking?
That's what I think. I've done the research, and over the past decade, whenever the Supreme Court allows a policy to go into effect temporarily, in almost every case, they rule for that side permanently. There's one or two exceptions involving the death penalty that I don't think apply here. So as a matter of tradition, the court has already signaled that it's likely to prevail. Now, they surprise me every June. They always disappoint me, so I don't know what's going to happen. But if the court sticks with its usual practice, Trump is going to win this one.
Well, but talk to us a little bit, though, about this is Hawaii. It's Hawaii is bringing this case here. And they're saying, though, that perhaps the court does have a role to play here, specifically because of the previous travel bans that were tried to be put into effect under this very president. I mean, in one of the briefs submitted by Hawaii here, they say, upon taking office, the president issued and reissued again a sweeping and unilateral order that purports to bar over 150 million aliens, the vast majority of them Muslim, from entering the United States. And so I guess they're saying that within the span of Donald Trump's presidency itself, they see ample evidence that that the travel ban oversteps what immigration law allows a president to do.
So the bulk of the evidence concerning President Trump's animus comes before the inauguration, and this raises a very difficult question. Will the Supreme Court rely on campaign statements to make the ruling? And we know that candidates often lie on the trail. Sometimes they keep promises. Sometimes they don't. After the inauguration, the statements are far more innocuous. They don't show an intent to discriminate against Muslims. The actual order itself is facially neutral. It was reviewed by hundreds of people within the government, and they made their decisions. And under traditional rules, the court would say, well, we may not like this policy, but it's been given the proper vetting. Congress gave the president the authority to act, and that's the end of the matter. Will the court follow the usual rules or not? We'll find out on Wednesday.
Yeah. I mean, but Neil Katyal, who's filed a brief on behalf of the state of Hawaii, for example, points to things that the president has tweeted and retweeted while president, including in Katyal's brief, three, quote, anti-Muslim propaganda videos. So, I mean, that's fair game, too. He's done it as president.
You know, the Solicitor General, the top lawyer of the United States, put a sentence in his brief that I never thought I would see. He basically said that retweets are not endorsements.
The president's retweets do not address the meaning of the proclamation at all.
Exactly. He said the retweets don't address the meaning of the proclamation, which is facially neutral. Again, you're going to need the Supreme Court to try to bridge the gap, to say that the courts are now going to parse all the president's statements on Twitter and otherwise to try to impute a bias to an otherwise facially neutral statement.
Mm. So take us back again to this bigger question, though. I mean, what role do you think you watch all this? You're a legal analyst. I mean, what role do you think the judiciary ought to be playing in issues of national security, especially given the controversy surrounding the choices made by this particular president?
Yeah, that's a million-dollar question. I've argued fairly consistently over the last year and a half that the court should afford President Trump what's known as a presumption of regularity, that he is the president, he was elected, and with that comes certain spoils. And so long as we have a facially neutral order and the president has a statutory authority, I think the courts would be well inclined to review this with a very deferential, with a lot of deference, to give the president the benefit of the doubt. There are political checks here as well. The travel policy has been very unpopular. We're going to have an election coming up in a few months. There are other ways to address this without having courts issue global injunctions barring the president from exercising his statutory and constitutional authority.
So, I mean, I hear you keep saying facially neutral, which I suppose, I mean, there are some people, obviously Hawaii doesn't think that, but other people do, of this travel ban. But it's how the Trump administration got to this particular version of it, I think, that some people continue to take issue with, and that if the court does indeed essentially sign off on it, we have no idea how they're going to rule, but if they do sign off on it, doesn't that also effectively give the Supreme Court's imprimatur to the entire process to get to this version of the ban?
Yeah, and look, I mentioned earlier there are three iterations of this policy, and the first one was not very well done. It was drafted with crayon and a cocktail napkin. But the third one went through a fairly rigorous process, and the question is, how closely connected is version 1.0 to version 3.0? Is version 3.0 still tainted by the first one? And I have a very difficult time arguing that the president is permanently disabled from doing this because the initial one was a botched job. I think that that's actually a very dangerous role. He has 4 years in office. If he makes a mistake of a high order, he can't recover. And I think traditionally the president, if he made a mistake, the courts halted it. He responded in kind. He modified the order based on the court's ruling. I think that's something that the Supreme Court should at least recognize and maybe admit the first one wasn't so good. But by the time we get to version 3.0, this was a fairly rigorous policy.
Well, Josh Blackman is associate professor at South Texas College of Law, speaking to us from Houston. He's also a contributor to Lawfare. Josh Blackman, thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.